Victoria was just coming out of Bailey's General Store when she saw Frank Morgan and Tyler Beaumont arriving in town. They brought their horses to a stop and tipped their hats. The ranger flipped the reins of his horse around the hitch rail and hopped up on the boardwalk beside her. He bowed.
Would you care for an escort somewhere, ma'am?
No, thank you. My mother's not feeling well, so I was just picking up a few things at the store here.
Morgan smiled at both of them, then glanced up the street behind him. His smile faded. Beaumont followed Morgan's gaze up the street and shook his head slowly. His broad shoulders slumped as if his plans had been dashed.
What do you want to do, Frank?
Not much I can do, but wait.
What's happening?
She could see a man on horseback ambling slowly down the street toward them. He wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary.
Who is that back there?
A very angry man. He's decided to take out some of his hate for the world on Frank. Miss Monfer, there's fixing to be some bloodshed. I think it's best you went on back inside the store.
How can you be sure there'll be a fight?
This bandit's been planning a little run-in with Frank since we were in Amarillo. Name's Lefty Cummins. He's got a bad right hand.
If he didn't do anything to cause a fight then, what makes you so sure he'll do anything now here in Weatherford?
I just know. It's a feeling, mostly. He gets so you can recognize it over the years. He'll make his play in the next few minutes. His eyes are locked on me, and he's sitting his horse like his mind's made up.
What if he's just made up his mind about what he plans to have for lunch?
I wish you were right about that, Miss Montfer. But unfortunately, you are not.
Frank reached in his pocket and took out a gold piece.
Fortunately, it is lunchtime. Tyler, I'm willing to spring for a phosphate if you'd be so kind as to accompany the young lady off the street to safety.
He leaned forward and handed the money to Beaumont. The ranger bit his lip and cocked his head slightly, looking back up the street.
I don't like to leave you now, Frankie. It feels wrong.
Go on with the pretty young lady. I'll be fine.
You got to play this close, you know. Whitehead is just looking for a reason to arrest you. A gunfight is as good a reason as any to throw you in jail and take time to sort things out. Or worse.
Morgan climbed down and tied Stormy beside the ranger's little bay. He'd stopped paying attention to anyone but the man approaching on the street.
I'll be fine. Order me a phosphate, too. I'll be there to join you in a bit.
Yeah, Morgan the Immovable has spoken. I guess we should get on down to the drugstore and order his phosphate.
Doesn't anyone care what I think? I might not even like phosphates for all you tough-talking men know.
Oh, we can go somewhere else.
This is so exasperating. Phosphates are fine. That's not what I meant. I'm just not accustomed to being ordered around like this. Who does Frank Morgan think he is, anyway?
Darling, if you only knew the half of it.
Tyler glanced back up the street, then shooed her quickly to the drugstore three buildings down. The door to Stidham's drugstore was propped open to catch some of the cool noon breeze. Mrs. Stidham had quite the green thumb, and a row of whiskey kegs lined the walk in front of the shop. Blue bonnets, sweet peas, paintbrushes, and Indian blankets filled each half barrel. The smell of all the flowers drifted through the door with the breeze and helped cover the smell of camphor and other salts inside the apothecary. Beaumont stood, his hat tilted back, and studied the slate board behind the counter.
It looks like they got strawberry and chocolate. Seeing as how no one's been asking your opinion in the last few minutes, I'll let you order for the both of us. I should warn you, though, Frank is partial to strawberry.
I don't particularly care what kind of... I'm not fussy about the flavor. I'll just have what you do.
It was impossible for her to think about what kind of phosphate to order when someone was about to die in the street. Weatherford was a quiet little town, full of respectable, church-going folks. This kind of thing just didn't happen here every day. Through the window, she watched Morgan bend down and begin to pick up each of his big Appaloosa's feet in turn. He used a hoof pick he got from a little pouch on his saddle to clean them. He had hung his hat on the saddle horn while he worked, and his dark hair shone brilliantly in the harsh noon sunlight. Victoria couldn't tell for sure, but it looked like he'd put on a little weight in the short time he'd been in town. In any case, he seemed to swell into a force of nature as the other gunman approached and tied his own horse to a hitch rail across the street. Victoria used the flat of her hand to shield her eyes from the glare and tried to make out the man across the street. His right hand was drawn up in a pitiful claw, and he carried it high and close to his chest, like a bird with an injured wing. He was close enough now that she could hear him through the open door.
Morgan! It's time for you and me to have a little talk.
Frank kept on with his hoof business, apparently ignoring his challenger.
You hear me, Drifter?
I hear ya. My horse picked up a stone a little ways back. It's wedged down deep by the frog here, and I'm trying to dig it out before he goes lame on me. Hold on, I'll be with you in just a minute.
I said I need to have a word with you. I don't give a damn about that spotted vagabond you call a horse.
I wonder what Frank's up to. He's sly as a fox and twice as quick.
You decided against the phosphates?
I knew you wouldn't drink it till after this is over. Truth is, I couldn't either. I didn't want him to go flat on us. Besides, Frank told me to look after you.
I didn't hear him say that.
Okay, I told myself to look after you. But I know Frank would have wanted me to.
Morgan, you stand up and face me, you spineless bastard. I seen the way you looked at my bad hand back in Amarillo. You and that little ranger friend of yours was laughing at me all the way out of town. I'm thinking you owe me an apology.
I'm sorry, then. I don't remember doing anything unneighborly to you. But if I did, I do apologize for it. You can count on that.
You gonna stoop there and show me your ass and call that a proper apology? Mister, I'm gonna shoot you where you stand and take my apology out of your hide if you don't stand up and face me!
Just then, Anthony Pierce, one of Sheriff Whitehead's raw-boned deputies, came out of the barbershop into the middle of the commotion. There were enough citizens along the street watching that he couldn't very well walk away.
What's going on here?
Pierce's hand clutched the handle of his sidearm. Frank acted as if the lawman was interested in his horse.
My fool horse stepped on a little stone up the trail a ways, and it's wedged in between the sole and the frog.
Oh, I see what he's up to. That fool deputy's in the pickle now, sure enough. I'm pretty certain Whitehead's given him strict orders to arrest Frank for any misdemeanor. Now he's forced to arrest the other fellow because Frank ain't doing a damn thing. Oh, sorry about the cussing.
Forget it.
This is none of your affair, law dog. My beef is with Morgan. He owes me a word to my face.
Harry Roberts piped up in front of the tobacco shop beside his butterball of a wife.
Mr. Morgan is only trying to do a little doctoring on his horse's foot, and this yahoo comes and starts in calling him out. I thought Morgan would have blasted him by now, but he hasn't. What are you going to do, Pierce? Handle this yourself, or go and get the sheriff?
Roberts was a county commissioner who didn't much care for the present sheriff.
Shut up, Harry. Of course I'm going to handle it myself. That's what you pay me for, ain't it?
Oh, yes, ma'am. He's got himself in sure enough pickle, all right.
Mister, you keep your hand away from that pistol and come with me. We'll get this all sorted out, and you can be moving on out of this county.
Finally, Frank stood up. He dusted off the front of his breeches before turning around. Victoria saw him throw a glance up the street at her and Beaumont. He wore a sly cat-that-ate-the-canary grin. Cummins let out a deep breath and played his eyes back and forth from Morgan to the deputy. He swallowed hard and let his good hand swing away from his gun before raising it above his head as Deputy Pierce walked toward him.
This ain't over, Morgan.
I know. It never will be.
The ill-tempered sheriff's deputy took Cummins' raised hands as a sign of contrition and put a hand on the crippled man's shoulder to turn him toward the jail. He had his own gun drawn, but didn't bother to take the gunman's pistol.
Get moving.
The deputy gave his prisoner a slight shove to add to the show. Cummins reacted with the speed of a viper. He shrugged the deputy off his shoulder and struck out with his withered hand to claw across the young lawman's face. Instead of shooting, Pierce threw up a forearm to protect his eyes. Cummins drove a hard left hand into his gut, then sent another into the tottering man's nose, knocking the pistol out of his hand and sending him sprawling to the dusty street. The deputy cowered there, squinting up into the sun, his arm across his face. Cummins drew his own pistol and pointed it at the stunned lawman. He thumbed back the hammer.
No snot kid of a law dog is gonna take me in while I can still shoot. And he damn sure ain't gonna push me around. I'll plant you, then I'll kill...
Hey, Cummins!
The gunman wheeled, pointing his pistol as Frank drew and shot him in the chest.
I apologize.
Morgan strode across the street to kick the gun out of the dying man's hand.
Morgan, you... Help, Morgan.
Frank rounded up Deputy Pierce's pistol and handed it back to him.
Thanks for coming by when you did. I didn't think you had the peach pits to follow through. Couldn't let my horse go lame on me, you know.
Even from across the street, Victoria could see Pierce stare holes into Morgan. He took the gun, but jerked away when Frank offered him a hand up.
You go ahead and drink my phosphate, Tyler. I feel more like a cup of coffee right now.
We haven't even ordered yet.
Good. Fact is, I could use a little of my own company right now. As odd as that may sound. You say your mama's feeling poorly?
I'm afraid the stress of my father's kidnapping has taken its toll on her.
Maybe I'll ride on over there in a few minutes. Make me and her a pot of strong coffee. What say you two youngsters go ahead and enjoy those phosphates? Tyler can help you bring your shopping home from the general store. I'll meet you at the Montfort place. Say, an hour? We'll ride out and have a talk with the Crowders then. See what they know.
That sounds good. I'll take good care of her.
I'd be willing to bet on that. He's a cocky little rooster, ma'am. But he generally knows how to handle himself. An hour then.
10 minutes later, after the crowd had dispersed, only one man was left across the street from the drugstore. He stood frozen, intently watching the large picture window on the drugstore. He wore light tan trousers and a pressed white shirt with a silk tie. He had his suit coat over his arm, having removed it because of the afternoon heat. Now, something more than the beating sun sent a burning glow to his neck and face. Reed Whitehead cursed under his breath as he watched Victoria Monfort, who was supposed to be his woman, sit and flirt across a tiny drugstore table with the sawed-off upstart of a Texas Ranger. She giggled and laughed and put her hand to her face, the way she never had when he told her jokes and funny stories. The runt of a ranger twirled his hand over his head, telling some ignorant tale, no doubt about his feats of daring and bravery. Victoria, Reed Whitehead's Victoria, sat entranced with rapt attention, her beautiful eyes fixed on the lawman. Reed's father had warned him about the Monfort girl.
She'll never stick by you, son. She's too damn fixated on herself and her own family to let a man in her life.
She was sure letting this man in. Whitehead felt the steak he'd had for lunch roll in his belly. A bitter taste filled his mouth.
Filthy little whore. I'll show you how a proper lady should behave.
Reed stepped down off the boardwalk and started across the street. The sorry little tramp would pay for this sort of behavior. Beaumont, busy with his story, stood at the table inside and twirled his hand around his head again. The huge pistol was plainly visible on his hip. Reed stopped, then turned quickly on his heels before anyone could see him. Victoria Monfort would get her just desserts, but he could wait until the meddling ranger wasn't around. Oh, yes, her time would come, and soon. He smiled to himself and began to form a plan in his head. Morgan found Mercy sitting alone in her parlor reading from a leather-bound book of poems. Seeing her there in her shining black skirt and spotless white blouse, he remembered how much she'd always liked to read. She stood when he came in and gave him a weary smile. Touching her hair to primp out of nervous habit, she motioned him to a seat in the chaise lounge next to her high-backed wooden chair.
You know what just upsets me to no end.
What's that?
Frank braced himself for whatever she might say. He felt sure he'd done a dozen things that Mercy deserved to be upset with him about. Any one of them was likely to hit as hard as a bullet.
Well, look at us. Here you are, thin and fit. Oh, you may have a little touch of distinguished gray around your temples and a laugh line here or there. But other than that, you are the picture of health and vigor. I, on the other hand, look and feel old as one of those drooping live oak trees out front of the house.
Well, that's about as foolish a thing as I've ever heard a woman say. You're as pretty as...
As the day you left?
Though her name was Mercy, when she attacked, she aimed straight for the throat. Frank leaned forward in his seat and stared at the back of his hands. He tried to decide what to say, wishing he could do something to make amends for the sins and weaknesses of his youth. When he finally did look up, Mercy was leaning back in her rocking chair, staring up at the ceiling. Tears streamed down her cheeks.
Mercy, I...
Don't. I don't want you to have to lie to me. What's done is done. Things have turned out for the good or bad, in spite of anything you or I may have done.
I know it's a poor substitute for good behavior, but I want you to know I am truly sorry for any hurt I caused you.
Mercy would never have any idea, but he could count all the people he'd ever apologized to on one hand. Not that he thought he was perfect. That wasn't it at all. Apologizing admitted a particular weakness, and in his line of business, admitting weakness was like the scent of blood to a pack of wolves. It could get a man killed. Mercy looked away, her eyes cast up at the ceiling again. Frank looked at the pale skin of her throat and the soft lines of her collarbones where they disappeared below the white fabric of her blouse. She was right in that she'd aged, but with her blue-black hair, high cheekbones, and slender neck, Mercy Monfour was yet among the most handsome women he'd ever seen. He felt his face flush when she finally met his gaze and caught him looking at her. He closed his eyes and tried not to think about their times together all those years ago.
We were little more than children. Old enough to do the things older folks did, but too young to understand the consequences of our own actions.
Mercy.
What is it, Frankie?
I'm nothing but a tramp, Mercy. I could have never given you something like this. After the war, I just couldn't see myself rooted to one spot, especially not here in Parker County. I've done a heck of a lot I'm sorry for. Most of it I couldn't make right if I had 100 lifetimes. All I can do is push ahead on the road I'm already on. I'd never be able to make it up to you for leaving the way I did. There's a bushel full of things in my life I'm not very proud of. And I sure do carry the blame on this one.
Not all of it, Frank. None of us are blameless.
Mercy moved to the chaise lounge beside Frank and took his hand, holding it in her lap.
I'm certainly not without guilt, but I am repentant, and that ought to count for something.
For a fact. If I'd known about the girl, I never would have gone. You know that, don't you?
What difference would that have made?
You know what I mean. I wish you would have told me.
What makes you so sure she's yours?
Isn't she?
Frank watched her face, looking for a sign he was right. Morgan was better than most at judging human character, but Mercy didn't give him a single clue. Instead, she smiled slyly and looked at him through narrow, swollen eyes.
Victoria looks like you. That's an undeniable fact. But you know, people always said you and I favor one another. And sometimes she acts so much like Isaiah, it frightens me. Some folks on his side of the family say she's the spitting image of his younger brother, Theo.
This is just like you. You always did love to toy around with me.
I was devastated when you left. I wanted to tell myself you felt some foolish duty to go fight in that foolish war.
I
knew it could not have been something as simple as that. If it had been, then you would have at least said goodbye to me. I finally had no choice but to assume you were not running to the war, but from me. And then Isaiah came into town, handsome young lawyer with the promise of a good future. He showed a bit of interest in the poor broken creature that I was, am, and we married a few weeks later. You see, Frank, you broke my heart, but Isaiah put it back together. Without any questions, I grew to love him almost as much as I need him.
I don't know what to say.
Only two people in this world are certain who Victoria's father is, and you aren't one of those two. You would be doing me a great favor if you didn't ask me about it again.
I won't.
Think of it this way, Frankie. Victoria already has a father. I am trusting in you to find him and bring him home to us safely. But she could always use another friend.
Horse hooves crunched on the gravel drive, and footfalls sounded on the porch. Morgan drew his pistol and stood, motioning for Mercy to stay put in the chair. He didn't need her hanging on him if the visitor happened to be Sheriff Whitehead.
Hello, the house!
Frank opened the door to find the ranger standing with a grinning Victoria scooped up in his arms. She wore his jacket, and both wore the smiles of recent laughter on bright faces. Mercy rose quickly.
What's happened? Are you all right?
It's nothing, Mother. I stumbled coming off the boardwalk in front of Stidham's and twisted my ankle, but I'm fine, really. I told Tyler I was all right and could walk, but he refused to let me try.
Well, I'm not very tall. If I drop you, you won't have far to fall.
Beaumont put the girl down, and she limped over to her mother.
You've been crying again.
I'm fine, dear. You look a fright, though. Are you sure about your ankle?
We'd best get on the move. We'll not accomplish much sitting around here talking.
You be careful, Ranger Beaumont.
Now you ladies watch yourselves now. Don't let anyone in unless you know them and trust them.
See if you can get some rest, Mercy. We'll go have a talk with old man Crowder. Find out what he knows about all this.
Thank you for checking in on me. I'm thankful for the chance to talk with you some.
Me too, Mercy. Me too.
After the men had gone, Mercy sat on the edge of her bed and watched Victoria change into fresh clothes after her tumble into the street.
What do you think of Ranger Beaumont? He was a perfect gentleman. I only stumbled and he treated me like I'd broken my leg. Wouldn't hear of letting me walk on my own.
He seems the decent sort of fellow.
He is, isn't he? He told me he intends to stay here in Parker County for a while and base his rangering from around here. What do you think he means by that?
I'd say you know what he means by that.
Victoria finished buttoning up her blouse and sat down by her mother. She ran a brush through her long ebony hair.
Daddy's gonna be all right, you know. With two men like Ranger Beaumont and Frank Morgan going after him, he'll be just fine.
I know.
Mercy bit her bottom lip. She felt tears welling up inside her again. Victoria, caught up in her own emotions, didn't seem to notice.
That Frank Morgan is a great man. You're lucky to have known him when you were both young.
Mercy could do nothing but offer a closed-mouth nod.
Tyler practically worships him. It's always Frank this or Morgan that. Tyler thinks he hung the moon. Did you know people have written books about him and his bravery and skill? If Tyler believes so strongly in him, he must be quite a man.
Mercy swallowed back a sob and touched her daughter gently on the shoulder. Victoria stared into space, thinking.
There's just something about him.
Mercy didn't say a word. She didn't need to. The Crowder's ranch actually started a half mile out of town, the part of the land that the railroad was interested in for stockyards. But the main house was nearly 3 miles out over cactus and rock-covered hills. The land nearest town was too poor for ranching and would take a good 50 acres just to support one cow-calf pair.
It's no wonder Crowder wants to get shed of this hunk of ground.
It is slim pickings, that's for sure.
Morgan scanned the countryside around them. There were more gnarled mesquites springing up than Morgan remembered as a child. The thorny trees seemed to be traveling further and further north each year with the passing herds of Mexican cattle that ate their beans and deposited them elsewhere in their manure as they traveled. Here and there, a patch of bronze and rust Indian blankets made a go of it on a bit of shallow gray dirt. But the biggest crop going by far seemed to be yucca plants and red anthills.
Gets better on up a ways.
Can't get much worse.
The flat crack of a rifle report echoed across the rolling hills in front of them.
Any other time I'd chalk that up to somebody taking a pot shot at a coyote. But the way things are going, I'd say we ease on up real careful-like and reconnoiter.
In the rolling country, it was impossible to tell exactly where the shot came from, but it sounded close, maybe even over the next rise. To be on the safe side, both men dismounted and led their horses so as not to be such large targets coming over the hill. They left their mounts a few feet below the crest and inched up on their bellies, skirting cactus and anthills as they went. Morgan carried his .44-40 Winchester. On the road below them, about 200 yards away, three cowboys sat astraddle their horses, surrounding a single buckboard. A black man held the reins, and a little girl of about 4 or 5 sat beside him on the seat. The cowboys milled around the wagon, taunting the driver. One of them had a rifle in his hands and fired it into the air, waving the weapon to make some point. None of the ne'er-do-wells looked to be over 20.
We must hurry on down.
Morgan backed quickly down the hill. He slid the rifle back in his saddle boot and swung aboard Stormy, gathering the reins. Beaumont climbed on his bay.
It's mighty lucky we happened along when we did.
Yeah, it is at that. I happen to know the man driving the wagon. If we don't hurry, there'll be 3 dead cowboys down there very shortly.
Morgan and Beaumont covered the ground in no time and trotted up to the little group like they owned the world. All 3 cowboys bunched up on one side of the wagon to meet them. They stood stirrup to stirrup and ignored the black man they'd been teasing only seconds before. It appeared they needed each other for moral support. Morgan pointed his horse straight for the kid with the rifle in hand. Beaumont veered off toward a cowboy at the end of the group on a small mouse-colored mare. Stormy was a stout animal with powerful hindquarters. He didn't know the word quit. Though the armed cowboy's pony stood its ground, the big Appaloosa plowed on through, knocking the smaller quarter horse back and peeling the rider to one side. Morgan took advantage of the boy's surprise and slapped the rifle to the ground before grabbing the scrawny kid by the scruff of the collar and dragging him across to his own saddle.
Hey!
He felt surprisingly light, and Frank couldn't help but smile to himself that his old strength was coming back. Beaumont gave the mouse-colored mare a sharp slap on the ears with his quirt. She squealed, then bolted, dumping her hapless rider on his rump into a wide patch of prickly pear cactus. Out of the corner of his eye, Frank saw the other one glance down at his sidearm. He drew and thumbed the hammer back on his peacemaker before the remaining cowboy could lay a hand on his own weapon.
If you boys had settled down a little, we're trying to save your miserable lives here.
The cowboy who'd landed in the cactus cussed a blue streak that made the little girl cover her mouth and go wide-eyed. He had enough sense not to make a play for his gun. The one Frank had walked lay groaning on the ground. Wolf stared him in the face and growled. The one who remained mounted sat dumbfounded at their new predicament.
How you been, Bose?
It's fine, Frank. I was on the way to town with my girl.
You know this here nigger, mister?
Morgan patiently directed his pistol at the loudmouthed cowboy's belly.
I do, but it's apparent you do not. All I can figure is that you're not from around here. Gather near, boys. Let me introduce you to an old friend of mine. If you listen close, you might even learn some history. The gentleman you chose to harass today is my friend, Bo Zickard, trail companion of Charles Goodnight and Oliver Lovin of Goodnight Lovin Trail fame. Mr. Eckard was killing Comanche and dodging outlaw bullets while you boys were still trying to figure out how to button your own britches. Like Mr. Goodnight, I'd trust him with my money and my life. You boys sure enough picked the wrong wagon to pester. You didn't bother his little girl, did you?
No, sir. We never said an unkind word to the youngster.
Well, that's a blessing anyhow. Mr. Eckard, go on, give these squirts a peek at what you had for them if their bad manners would have spilled over to that sweet little child of yours.
Love to.
Glaring hard at the cowboys, the black man shifted the green wool coat across his lap to reveal a double-barreled shotgun sawed off to 10 inches. Both hammers were back, and his finger rested on the trigger.
What'd I tell you? Where are you from?
Fort Worth.
What brings you whelps all the way across the county line to try and get yourselves killed?
The boss gave us the day off. Could you please call off this wolf of yours? I swear I'll not move a muscle.
Wolf padded off to sit at the edge of the group, but licked his chops and kept a wary eye on the cowboys.
You still didn't answer my question.
Morgan looked down at the same cowboy and motioned with his gun barrel for him to get to his feet.
Why would you come spend your day off in Parker County? Haven't you got enough whores and saloons over in Fort Worth?
We was supposed to come over and stir things up a little.
Shut up, Boomer! These saddle tramps got no right to be privy to our business.
Saddle tramps?
I guess they don't know who you are, Frank. About to stir things up, I reckon. That's what they wanted to do in the first place.
Who are you?
It don't matter if he's Jesse James. We ain't telling him our business.
Walt, use your head. Jesse James has been dead a long time. I think this is...
The cowboy named Walt jerked his pistol. Morgan's Colt barked once, and the boy slumped in his saddle, holding a hand across his bleeding shoulder. His gun thudded to the ground. Ickard's daughter held her hands over her ears and shut her eyes.
I apologize for scaring the girl.
Think nothing of it. Only did what you had to. She'll be fine.
You just shot me, you son of a bitch! And now you're worried about scaring some stupid little nigger girl?
Shut up your own self, Walt! I was just about to tell you, this here is none other than Frank Morgan. I recognize him from a drawing from one of them dime novel books, Frank Morgan and the Deadly Ambush.
Morgan grinned and looked over at Beaumont. He'd never heard of that one. And they were drawing pictures of him now?
The boss sent us over to stir things up. We're supposed to make everyone in Parker County know what a bad idea it would be to have our types run around if the railroad puts the stockyards over here.
Morgan lowered his gun to his thigh, but didn't put it away.
I see. Well, I got a proposition for you. We can either settle this now, just among us friends, or you can dump your guns in the back of Mr. Ickard's wagon. It's scamper your little behinds back across the county line before you bite off more than you care to chew.
I already dropped mine.
Dump our guns.
Don't want you to get up the hill a little ways and decide to start taking pot shots at us. Take it easy now, nice and slow.
I'll leave them at the ranger office over in Palo Pinto County. If you want them back, you can ride over and get them in a week or two.
Palo Pinto's 60 miles away from Fort Worth.
I said we could handle this now, if that's what you're of a mind to do.
The cowboys put their rifles and sidearms in the back of the wagon under the watchful eyes of the three hard-looking men. Boomer took out a horn-handled bowie knife and tossed it in beside his rifle.
You can keep your knife, son. From the looks of your pal, Walt, there, you might need it to amputate his arm.
The cowboys looked back and forth at each other for a moment, then turned and rode away with tails tucked low. Even Walt kept his head bowed, the reality that he knew he'd almost been killed by Frank Morgan finally sinking in. Ickard watched the chastised cowboys ride over the rise before lowering the hammers on his double barrel.
What brings you back to Parker County? You always told me you were going to steer clear of this place.
I know I did. But a friend called me about all the problems y'all are having with the stockyard decision.
Mercy?
Uh-huh.
I see.
Bose, I want you to meet another friend of mine. Texas Ranger Tyler Beaumont.
Glad to make your acquaintance.
Same here. Ranger's looking in on this, huh? It is some bad goings-on in these parts, that's for certain. Now someone's gone and kidnapped the good judge.
Your place is out this way, Bose. You know anything about the Crowders?
I know they got a passel of no-account sons. Tom, the youngest of them, is in jail right now for mistreating a young gal from town. I expect he'll likely hang for it.
You hear any scuttlebutt about the judge?
It beats all how some folks go on and on talking around a black man like you don't hear nothing at all. Crowder's got something to do with it, that's for certain. I heard his boys laughing it up about something. Whitehead, he knows better though. He's too smart to let him babble on in front of me like they was. I didn't hear enough to do you much good.
So Sheriff Whitehead is in cahoots with Crowder?
Clean up to his eyeballs. Old man Crowder's for the stockyards. So the sheriff, he's for the stockyards too.
Suppose I should ask you what your opinion is on the matter.
You should know better than that, Morgan. I'm a black man in Texas. The war may have freed me and my kind, but they didn't give me no right to no opinion. These folks want me to have a particular view. They'll let me know what it's supposed to be. I'll tell you what I think, though. I think you should have a word with young Tom Crowder over in the jailhouse. Them Crowder boys is tight. He's bound to know something, and he's just dumb enough to make a slip-up. If the sheriff will let you see him, that is.
I saw Whitehead riding out of town a half hour before we left.
With any luck, he's still gone then. I hate to run off on you, Bose.
I'll run into you again, I reckon. Much obliged for you keeping me from having to kill those boys.
Old man Crowder glared at the group gathered on the bank of Cottonwood Creek with his one eye. He was steaming, and they all knew it. Pony and Pete both stayed well out of his way, and the handful of his hired men kept their eyes pointed at the ground. Even Sheriff Whitehead kept quiet.
It's a good thing your dear mother can't fathom what a couple of absolute dumbasses she whelped. And you, Purnell, you stupid bastard, you ought to have more sense than to let him take the judge with all your schooling. What were you boys thinking? Shut your gob. You weren't thinking. That's just the problem. I ought to kill every damned one of you.
Mr. Crowder.
Speak, lawyer man. Tell me what happened.
He saw us. Now, if he identified us, he would have tied this back to you.
You were supposed to wear masks.
Sir, we had to take care of Pete. That girl almost knocked his head off. The judge came in and surprised us. It was either kill him or bring him with us.
I want the old fool to change his mind. I want my boy to be set free by the judge.
Why don't you let me spring him? You say the word and one of my deputies will die letting the boy escape. I've already got one I'd pick for the job.
I don't want him to escape. Then he'd have to be on the run for the rest of his life. I want him released, all legal and tidy-like.
I'm afraid the horse is already out of the barn on that account, Mr. Crowder.
The hell it is. Those charges are all trumped up against the boy anyhow. That smoot girl led him on to trap him and make us look bad, to turn the vote her father's way.
Crowder hooked a thumb toward the rough log cabin 50 yards away. A hired man Purnell had never seen sat on a wooden bench smoking a cigarette in front of a heavy slat door. He held a rifle across his lap. Purnell considered the man lucky for not having to take part in the tongue-lashing from the old man.
The judge is half loopy from the beating Pony gave him. He may come around our way of thinking yet.
Judge Monfort doesn't seem like the kind of man to change his mind because of a beating.
Maybe he won't take well to threats on himself, but we still got his daughter to use as ammunition if we need to. For that matter, we still got his wife we could use.
With all due respect, Mr. Crowder, what good would it do to take the women if we ought to have the judge? I think he knows you mean business by now.
No, no, no. He knows we can hurt him, but he doesn't know how deep our resolve goes, how badly we want this, what we're willing to do. If there's anything I've learned over these years, it's how mighty a man can be if he has the courage to do whatever has to be done.
So you want us to go get his women?
That's exactly what I want you to do. We'll drag his women folk out here and tell His Highness how far we are prepared to go to see this through. There's nowhere he can hide, nowhere his family can hide to steer clear of us. I foresee him coming around to my way of thinking. It's a destiny for this county he cannot stop. Pompous old fool must be shown.
There's still Morgan and that ranger to worry about. They're dogging around all over the county trying to see what they can find out.
Thought you were going to arrest that son of a wily bastard. He could be a real fly in the ointment, that one.
I ran into a young fellow who has it in for Morgan pretty bad. I just gave him a little nudge to go ahead and do what he needs to do. If he kills Morgan, our problems are solved. If Morgan kills him, I'll have a new charge to arrest him on. And I can guarantee you, Mr. Morgan won't survive the night in jail.
Provided he don't blow your head off when you go to bring him in.
He's good, but he's not that good.
Listen, Pete, Mrs. Monfort should be easy enough to take. She always struck me as a flighty sort of little hummingbird when I saw her at church. I think if somebody would just go and bark at her just right, she'd pass out and you could throw her across a horse. Slam, bam, that's all there is to it. On the other hand, that girl, yeah, she could be a little bit of a problem. Only got so many sons, and the ones I got only got so many fingers. You can't afford to have them get all broken and butchered by some whelp of a girl.
Oh, don't you worry about her. She trusts my son Reed. He'll take her somewhere where she can pitch whatever size fit she wants to. It won't make any difference at all.
No matter what Bob Grant did, he just didn't look like a lawman. If he bent over, squatted to put wood in the stove, or just reached up to scratch his ear, the long tail on his homespun shirt came untucked and covered half his pistol. His hat blew off constantly, even in the lightest wind, and his thinning hair stuck out in all directions. Morgan stood beside Stormy, a block down the street from the sheriff's office, and watched the portly deputy leave to meet his wife at a small cafe across the street. Morgan kept his distance. A deputy he didn't recognize had come to relieve Grant at the jail. Morgan hoped it was just for a supper break. He didn't think any of the other deputies would be so accommodating as Grant and let him talk to the Crowder boy.
What say we go get a big pot of coffee and some pie till our man Grant gets back?
Nah, I could eat. I eat more pie than any man I ever laid eyes on. But apart from having to let my belt out a notch, I reckon it ain't hurt me too bad.
Charlene's was a narrowly built shotgun-style building wedged in between a hardware store and boot shop, as if it was built after the fact on a whim of the landowner who didn't want to waste one square foot of property. Though over 100 feet deep, the building was no more than 15 feet wide. The tables zigzagged down the length of the place to make the most use of available space. While the establishment served alcohol, there was no room for a bar. Patrons got to sit at tables to do their eating or drinking. A haggard woman with long red hair piled up in a loose beehive held together with a wooden pencil took orders and served drinks. She wore a frilly costume of white and black lace that accentuated and exposed a good deal of her full figure and advertised her other duties besides waitressing. The place might not have had a proper bar, but it had everything else a saloon had to offer, plus a stellar reputation for fried chicken. It was a little past supper time, and there were only a few other patrons scattered among the tables. Frank chose a chair about halfway back, facing the door. He sat a little sideways, so Beaumont could also have a gunfighter's view. Two older men in faded overalls sat two tables over playing checkers. They looked up at Frank and eyed him warily.
Well, if it ain't the Parker County prodigal.
Frank studied the men for a moment and realized he knew both of them. The Murphy brothers had been hired hands around the county for as long as Morgan could remember. They picked melons, herded cattle, and were not above busting someone's head for you if you paid them enough. They had at times been the terror of the county. One of them, Frank couldn't remember which, had done some time in prison. Morgan wondered if he'd ever live to retire and play checkers in a pair of bib overalls. Somehow, he doubted he'd want to.
You know them?
I guess I know most of the town, either by name or reputation. Cordell Patterson. He's a good friend of mine. Hilda, the waitress there, was his kid sister. She used to run around in her underwear while we were picking peaches.
Well, she's not changed her ways much in that regard.
The cowbell chime on the doorknob took Morgan's attention away from his reminiscing. The day was bright enough to silhouette the new arrival, but Frank recognized him instantly. Frank got to his feet. Beaumont looked puzzled and followed suit. A hulking man with a bushy brow and a salt-and-pepper beard strode over and gave Morgan's hand a hearty pump-handle shake. Morgan couldn't keep from smiling. This was more than he'd hoped for. First running into Bowes, and now this.
Ranger Beaumont, I'd like you to meet another friend of mine.
Charles Goodnight.
Please join us.
I'd love to. This place has the best fried chicken east of the Panhandle. You were here because of this Monfort business?
News travels fast.
It's a damn shame about the good judge. He's a stubborn old coot, but I can't help but like him.
If he's alive, we'll get him back.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mr. Goodnight. I heard you spent some time in the ranger companies.
Oh, I done a bit of rangering in my day. Back before the war, though, when we were still shooting cap and ball. None of this new fancy stuff like you youngsters have today. We had to supply our own horses and cartridges.
Not much better now. Sometimes I think I'm a volunteer rather than an employee of the state.
The cowbell jingled again, and all three men looked up in time to watch a thin, pockmarked man in a black hat stride through the door. He walked with a purpose and surveyed the clientele over his hooked nose as if he were looking for someone in particular. He wore no badge, but he moved with the swagger of a lawman.
You know him?
Never seen him before.
I don't recognize him either.
As the man moved away from the backlight of the door, Morgan could see he wore a single pistol on his left side. The holster was tied down to his thigh. He walked past Morgan and glared with a toss of his ruddy head. He took a seat a few tables toward the back and tipped his chair against the wall.
You don't know me, do you, Morgan?
Sorry, partner, can't say as I do. Have we met?
Cuts me to the bone that you don't remember me, Frankie. A body would think you'd remember Jim Powers.
Big Jim Powers was the biggest, meanest, ugliest kid in the county. You got one of those qualities. But it would take three of you to make up one of Big Jim.
Spent some time in Elmira Prison during the war.
That explained the pockmarks on the man's weathered face. Morgan had heard of the nasty, overcrowded conditions at the Union prison camp in Elmira. Horribly overcrowded, with filthy excuses for quarters, it was the Union version of Andersonville.
Found me the Lord there.
Looks like you found someone to eat your food for you. The Jim Powers I knew weighed as much as a small horse.
Prison and disease has a way of taking the weight off a man.
Finding the Lord make you any less ornery?
Frank already saw the answer in Powers' sunken eyes and the hollows in his pox-scarred cheeks. The last time they'd met, the big man had sworn to kill him.
I say a little prayer over the bodies of the men I kill now.
Morgan pushed away from the table and motioned Beaumont and Goodnight to back away. Both men complied, but the ranger scowled like he felt cheated out of a fight.
Listen, Powers, I'm prepared to let bygones be bygones. I buried any grudge against you a long time ago.
And the only thing around here gonna be buried is you, Morgan. You know I nearly couldn't bring myself to fight for the South on account of I knew I'd be fighting on the same side as you.
That's a gut full of hate.
You always were a cocky sort of braggart, Frankie.
Powers let his chair tip forward and got to his feet. He never took his eyes off Morgan. Frank rose to face his adversary. The two men playing checkers cleared well out of the way, and Hilda, the bloomer-wearing redhead, hugged the far wall by the kitchen door.
You know what stuck in my craw the most about you?
I can't wait to hear it.
You were every bit as mean as I was, but they all overlooked it at you. If you hurt somebody, it was all well and good, just Frankie Morgan looking out for the underdog. Just good old Frank taking care of the weak. You make me sick.
You said it yourself, Powers. I'm every bit as mean as you. Just simmer down. You can ride away from this.
Pure hatred glowed in the puckered scars on the thin man's face. The nostrils on his hooked nose flared, and his left hand hovered over the butt of his gun. Bony fingers flexed and stretched. Powers was quick, but Morgan's Colt boomed first and rocked the narrow room. The thin man's shot blasted a hole in the floor, and his pistol spun on his hand, the trigger guard dangling from the knuckle before it fell harmlessly to the ground. Powers tottered, caught himself with the flat of his hand on the table, and breathed a ragged breath at Morgan.
This don't make me like you anymore.
Morgan nodded, keeping his gun trained on the dying man.
Yeah, well, I didn't think it would do much good that way.
Truth is, people like you and me, we've been dead for years. Just takes us a while to find it out.
He was dead before he hit the ground. Frank shook his head and holstered the peacemaker.
Pitiful. That's a piss-poor way to leave the Earth after making it through a stint in that damned Union prison. I hope you're proud of yourself.
You know, I brought Loving back from New Mexico after he got the blood poisoning and died. Buried him over at Greenwood Cemetery. I suppose I can carry you over and plant you right beside him when your time comes. The way things are going, I don't believe it'll be a long trip.
I reckon I'll be just as happy to be planted wherever I drop. And to tell you the honest truth, I hope it's a long way from here.
Parker County changed that much since you've been gone, Frank?
Nope. I have.
Deputy Grant let Morgan and Beaumont in to see Tommy Crowder with no problem. The lawman had likely heard of the gunfight at Charlene's and didn't appear to want any part of such an adventure on his watch. He didn't even ask to take their guns when he ushered them back into the narrow cell block. Morgan stood with his back to the wall after Grant left them alone. Jail was the one place where Morgan felt truly uneasy. Of course, he'd spent time in jails before, but when he did, he felt like a wolf with his leg caught in a trap. He'd just as soon gnaw his own foot off as spend time trapped like that again. He took his surly mood out on Tom Crowder.
Maybe I ought to let you out of there so we can have a little talk about what your family's been up to lately.
You Frank Morgan?
I am, and this is Texas Ranger Beaumont.
You ain't nothing like I thought you'd be. I thought you'd be some sure enough giant the way people go on and on about you.
I'm a free man. That's more than I can say for you. We know your family kidnapped Judge Monfort. It'll go a lot better for you if you tell us where they took him.
I don't know what you're talking about. You don't scare me, Mr. Frank Gunfighter Morgan. What can you do to me anyhow? I'm already in jail. Just for trying to get a little sweetness from that fool girl.
You sorry bastard. I got a friend who's a Lepan Apache. He's got a lot of interesting ways to help you remember the information we need.
Well, bring him on then. I ain't never got to kill myself an Apache. Most of them was already killed or runned off by the time I was old enough.
He doesn't know anything. His pop probably doesn't trust him enough to let him in on the important plans.
I know plenty you'd like to know, but my lawyer said to keep my yap shut, so that's what I'm doing.
The prisoner's eyes narrowed, and he pressed his face up against the bars so his cheeks stuck through.
You know what, Morgan? You skinny old goat. You better hope I don't get out of here, because if I do, I think I'll kick your ass.
Frank's right hand shot out and connected with the tender end of Crowder's nose, knocking him back into the cell and onto his rump. His hands covered his face, and blood poured from between his fingers.
No need to wait until you're out. I'm right here if you want me. Yeah, that's what I thought. Long on bark, and short on bite.